the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
And so to TV and streaming, we'll have Elaine Burke and Joe Shea with us in a moment. But before we talk to them, we want to talk to Darren Smith, who is the MD of Kite Television, which makes The Traitors in Ireland. And it's back next Sunday evening, eagerly anticipated. The big hit for RTE Television last year, and now it's back. Can it be as good second time around? Darren Smith, thank you so much for joining us. Now, for about the 10 people who are listening to this who might not have seen The Traitors last year, and maybe for the few people who just have forgotten it, just remind people what it is The Traitors is.
The Traitors is a whodunit set in a castle in Slane, except from the start, we as the audience know whodunit. It's the other kind of 19 or 20 hapless souls in the castle who are trying to figure out who's doing it. Does that cover it?
It does. And I know it had been a major international hit, but were you surprised even by just how much the Irish audience embraced an Irish version of it last year?
Delighted. The thing is, we knew it was a good format, as you say. We kind of loved it from day one, and we saw it very early doors. Mairéad Whelan, who is the series producer, she spotted it when it was the Dutch version, and we were being pitched it by All3Media. So we kind of fell for it very early. And then, you know, then there's the job of getting it greenlit and getting it made. And we knew in the castle on year one that we had the raw materials, that the cast were fab, that they engaged in the game. And then, you know, there's always that moment on a shoot where, you know, a shoot is great and a shoot can have one atmosphere, and then the edit can sometimes pour cold water on what you were feeling on the shoot. But once we got into the edit, we knew it was all there. So whilst it would have been kind of outrageously cocky to expect the reaction we got, we'd have been very disappointed if it hadn't gone down well. We knew we had something good.
And RT were delighted to pay for it because I think it paid for itself in audience numbers and commercial revenues. So now we have season two. And for setting up season two, was it much easier to find a cast for this series?
Yeah, I mean, you know, casting non-scripted Irish TV is tricky. You know, convincing people to take part in shows generally is tricky. Even long-running shows that we do, like For This Family or Gogglebox, you know, there's a casting job and it's a hard job every year. The Traitors is a different version of a hard job. It's managing the sheer volume of numbers. I think we got over 8,000 people applying this year, which is just kind of a stupid number because you have to process all of that. And the beauty of Traitors as a format is you could really walk into a room with 24 people and start playing it and you'd get a game. But then you cast for entertainment, you cast for the nation. There kind of has to be somebody for everybody in the audience. And you want to avoid the predictable. And, you know, so this year, obviously, the enormity of Paddy loomed large for us. So, you know, the obvious thing there to do is not go for another Paddy, because the audience will smell that straight away. Audiences are they're very selective these days. They see the tricks coming, and, you know, we have a very, very, very different cast this year, and they just bring a different energy to it, and therefore you get a different game.
Okay, but given that most of them, I'd imagine, would have seen last year's Irish Traitors and may have watched the Traitors from various other parts of the world, were they perhaps some of them trying to be a bit more clever maybe than last year's cast, you know, anticipating that they knew now how to deal with this?
Matt, there's a couple of them who could do a PhD in Traitors. They know it better than us. And yeah, everyone knew it better. But that kind of cancels itself out because they'd all watched it. And, you know, the real genius of the format is how robust it is. So there are people in the show and there are moves pulled that I guess it would be fair to say if when we were casting we thought those moves would be pulled, we might have gone, oh, no. But actually, it just drew up a story we could never have predicted. And it's the lack of being able to predict what happens in Traitors that is the magic. So sometimes you can know too much and the format will kind of, you know, do what it does to you for knowing too much. If that may, I'm trying not to give stuff away here, but for, you know, because some people do really listen to everything and talk about everything that we say and come up with great conclusions. They're very, very seldom correct. But yeah, I'm choosing my words here carefully and thus tripping over them badly.
So well, I understand that. But how difficult is it to make sure that all of your cast and all of your crew and everybody else involved keep stum about not just the eventual winner, but when various people go out?
It is difficult, but it's kind of less difficult, A, than you think, and B, than it used to be in TV, where there were big reveals and big secrets. The first show, one of the first show I worked on was the Irish version of Popstars, which was crazy big at the time. It was the Nadine Coyle moment, and the media were out to spoil. The papers ran spoilers, and we were in a constant defensive mode. Now they don't do that, and people don't want spoilers. I would, like, last year I bumped into people, and, you know, traders would come up, and they were, and people would say, don't tell me who won. And I was going, well, yeah, no, I'm definitely not going to tell you who won. But also, they don't want spoilers. There will be speculation online, but that's all it is.
Well, actually, until Darren, that's a really good point, because I think the newspapers realise they'll only annoy their audience if they do give away stuff. However, I'd have more fear about the so-called in-the-knows who take to social media trying to wreck it for everybody else.
But what's really entertaining, what's really enjoyable is knowing, you know, what does happen, seeing the absolute confidence of people online saying what's about to happen, knowing how wrong they are, and then seeing them the next day be equally wrong and equally as confident. It's a joy.
Well, one last thing, Darren. How many episodes are we going to get to enjoy this year, starting next Sunday night?
12.
Over how many weeks?
4. So we're Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, same as last year. And then Uncloaked comes on straight afterwards with Kevin McGarren.
Excellent stuff. We're looking forward to it. Darren Smith, congratulations in advance.
Thanks, Matt.
I think we're all anticipating it'll be great fun. It'll have everybody talking. One of the rare moments, I think, of modern day television where you'll have water cooler conversations the following day in the workplace and, of course, online as well. Darren Smith from Kite Television, thank you. And Elaine Burke, are you master's or PhD level at this stage in the traitors?
No. I think maybe junior cert level at best. But my brother and my mother and my aunt, I think, would be doctor traitors, all right. They got sucked in with the Irish traitors like myself, and then they went back and watched as many traitors as they could get their access to via their various subscription channels and things like that. And that's what a lot of people have done here. Because I think Darren actually hit upon what's so fun about this show. It's critiquing it as if you, what you would do as a player, and trying to predict things that are going to happen and being wrong about it and just rolling with that and having fun with it. Like, it's a real collective experience, which is something that we're lacking a lot in culture today, because things are so fragmented and there's no longer like appointment to view TV. But Traitors has created a format that is appointment to view TV. I was talking to a friend who's gone into Electra Picnic, and she was like, oh no, I'm going to miss the first episode of The Traitors on Sunday night. And I was like, well, that's just the intro. You know, you can catch up on Monday. It'll be fine. And be nice, cozy, you know, after a lecture picnic to recover with that. And like, it gets people talking. It's kind of a safe thing to talk about. And I think there's another thing that's really beautiful about this. So these reality contests in past iterations have often been unfolding live before our very eyes. But Darren talked about there about like doing the edit, and they know the result as they're editing things together, which gives them an advantage of how they craft the storytelling. And they can mislead us in terms of who we think is going to make it to the end of this show and who's not going to. So there's a whole big production element to how they pull this together. And I think it's just a great format and it really works very well.
Joe, are you a fan?
I'm not a fan, and I'm one of the few people probably in Ireland or worldwide who isn't a fan, because like 60%, the finale was watched by nearly 60% of the people who were watching TV in Ireland when it happened. So, I mean, that's just in this day and age, that's out of this world type audience figures that, you know, are just incredible. I can see the attraction, and I think one of the attractions as a viewer is that it's playable. You can play along. You can imagine yourself playing, and you can put yourself there. If you're watching I'm a Celebrity, you can't imagine yourself being stuck in a jungle eating various bits of kangaroo. But with this, everybody in the room can play, and we can all play along, and we can jump into the game. And I think that's one of the big attractions of it. The Irish version of it, they either got very lucky, or they were very smart. And I think it's a bit of both, because they got the exact right venue, the exact right presenter in Siobhan McSweeney, and they also got a great mix of chemistry in the first episode. This is the difficult second album. Their problem here, and their big issue here now, is just matching expectations, and that's going to be the real challenge for them this year.
It is indeed. Okay, I know that was going to be your pick of the week, Elaine. So will you give us something else as well?
Yeah, I knew we'd be talking about it anyway, so I thought I'd throw something else into the mix. Now, this actually had its first episode last night, and it concludes tonight. It concludes quite soon, actually, at 6:30 on RT1. But it's called An Irish Atlantic Rainforest. And it's a show built around Eoin Dáil Tún and the work he's been doing in rewilding some acres of land in the Beira Peninsula. He has written a book about this as sort of a memoir and a bit about his experience. And he himself doesn't come from a naturalist background, but he has become this kind of naturalist and environmental activist in the process of doing this work. And he's teaching people a lot about what our natural habitats would look like if they had been left to grow by themselves. So something that's a challenge in our natural ecologies is we have a lot of goats, sheep and deer who eat away at any kind of tiny little saplings of bushes and trees and things like that. So they don't get a chance to grow and flourish in the way that they would if those animals weren't constantly grazing in a lot of our natural environments and our natural habitats. And basically he's tried to show the world what Ireland could look like if it was allowed to rewild. And it's really educational. It's also really lush and green, and there's lots of nature sounds. It's actually a really gorgeous watch in that respect as well.
Okay, what's your pick of the week, Joe?
Well, I actually really, really enjoyed the Beckham kind of fly on the wall reality series. And I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it, because I was never a huge David Beckham fan. And obviously, it's got given a lot of ideas to other footballers, because there's a whole load of these shows coming along now. And Michael Owen, who might strike you, the former Liverpool, best in Real Madrid, England striker, who was kind of famous for being boring, the most beige man in sports, I heard him called once. He's getting a new reality show, but it's with his family. It's on Amazon Prime from Friday. It's called Meet the Owens. It's a 6-part series. I think it's probably going to be as much about his kids, including his daughter Gemma, who Love Island fans will remember, because she was on Love Island. She's kind of trying to make herself a celebrity. She is a celebrity, I suppose, in that respect, an influencer and all that kind of stuff. So it's a look at Michael Owen and his family life. I think four.
Are you serious? Yeah. I mean, you could have given us the Mourinho documentary on Netflix. You could have given us the Guardiola
documentary, and you're giving us a Michael Owen reality show instead. Well, Matt, no, hold on a second. Michael Owen, this is all new to me. He has 140 racehorses. He runs an entire racing stable. It's big business. He is an interesting guy. And I think part of the fascination with him is he's such a boring guy, he might actually be fascinating in his boredom, or in how kind of, how he doesn't play the big I am. He was never like Beckham. He was never into his image. He was never into his branding. He was never that kind of stuff. He was a phenomenally successful
fairness,
and good striker.
He has been in the studio sitting in the chair that Elaine is in now, and he was far more interesting than I expected him to be. But give us something else just in case we don't want to watch that.
Okay, all right. Okay. I don't think you're going to like this one either. But Dark Matter, right? In my weakness for really high concept, gorgeous science fiction series that are shown on Apple that nobody ever watches continues. Season 2 of Dark Matter. If you haven't seen it, if you like Christopher Nolan's sci-fi kind of mad kind of time traveling interdimensional kind of stuff, watch season 1 of Dark Matter, because not enough people did. Joel Edgerton is in it and Jennifer Connelly, and he's a physicist who discovers basically a black box which allows him to travel through dimensions in time. It's really well done. It's really fascinating, and it plays with a lot of concepts in science fiction and turns them upside down. That's Dark Matter. Season 1's on Apple now, and season 2 starts on Friday. And if you like sci-fi, I really would recommend it.
Okay. Elaine, I'm a bit of a fan of The Gentleman, the Guy Ritchie show, which Stuart Carlin played a big part in season one. Season two is due to come out very, very soon. And there's already planning for season three, but apparently Meghan Markle was due to be in it. This emerged on Friday afternoon in the wake of her returning to Britain with her husband, mm-hmm. Harry Windsor. And then the next thing we hear is that she's dropped already because of apparently an intense backlash.
Yeah, so this is from former Vanity Fair and New York Magazine editor-in-chief Tina Brown, who claims the decision to cast Markle in the drama has been reversed. She said she learned, doesn't name her sources or anything like that, that casting has been withdrawn. And she wrote this on her Substack. Now, there's something about these rumour mills, Substacks of industry insiders that I take with a pinch of salt because, as you mentioned there, Matt, The Gentleman is in development for season three, not yet greenlit, you know, and season two is about to come out. So they are in need of some promotional material as well and maybe stirring up a bit of drama about The Gentleman, which is the show that I'd forgot existed until this story came out, can help in that respect. So sometimes these rumours are orchestrated and more this is what's happening in the entertainment industry. People are controlling narratives online and getting people to stir up. Now, it also could have a lot of validity to it. But
I think she'd be perfect for it, actually, because, I mean, she could play coming in, moving in with the sort of the landed gentleman and all the rest of it who happens to be running a cannabis farm.
And even the way this story is kind of positioned, she doesn't come off that terribly because it kind of looks like she's been dropped in a way that like the public haven't favoured her and it's like an attack on her in some kind of way. And it's also putting the news out there that she's coming back to the UK to possibly relaunch her career as an actress. So there is an element here where this could just be a story to stir things up and make things happen.
Not the done thing for a member of the royal family, is it, to be slumming on a TV series for Netflix like The Gentleman?
Actually, well, they've been slumming on Netflix for quite some time and taking several million, tens of millions of dollars to
it's
do
more
so.
More honourable than what some members of that family have been
yes,
up to.
Yes, exactly. I was just about to say it. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how she gets all this flack and other members, Andy and people like that, don't seem to kind of skate by, at least. You know, anyway, Meghan Markle, it's a fascinating little media story, this, because as a lot of people, including Piers Morgan, have worked out, if you want to get some headlines, if you want to get some publicity, if you've got a Substack, if you've got a YouTube channel, you want publicity, just mention Meghan Markle or somehow.
The pile on Meghan Markle is extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But what the UK media have realised is people love reading about it and they love seeing her getting slapped. And that's the dark, cold way of saying it. There's a lot of people out there who really enjoy hearing that she's not doing well, that her career will never come back, that everybody hates her, she's a terrible person, she's pushy, she's this, she's that. And a lot of media figures know this, and they know that if you just shoehorn her into whatever your content you're providing, you'll definitely get eyeballs. I don't think there's anything to this story at all. It just doesn't sound kosher.
Okay, one last thing briefly, Elaine. Given that the Netherlands has decided already to boycott next year's Eurovision Song Contest, saying the event is no longer neutral, what's the Irish position on this?
No word on that yet. I think the last statement officially from Kevin Backhurst, I don't know, RTE, on their position was the boycott in May and how their position wasn't changing from that respect at that time when the contest was being held. And I expect that it will take some time for RTE to announce what their intentions are for next year, simply because they do a later competition than a lot of other nations that enter. Like, our competition is usually early in the few months of the next year, where some people start their process a lot earlier, and that's maybe why the Netherlands has come out now. They were part of the boycott along with Ireland, Slovenia, Spain and Iceland last year. I believe Belgium either has intimated or has confirmed that they are also thinking of boycotting next year as well. They have two different broadcasters, and the broadcaster that's in charge next year is looking to maybe pull out from it as well. So there's definitely still a lot of ructions going on among the European Broadcasting Union around this event. They're trying to make changes. Those changes don't seem to be satisfactory. There's still a lot more to this story to unfold.
Elaine Burke, Joe Shea as ever. Thank you.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.